Hello, everybody. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news and transfer news. Get your comments in on this. I told you I did not trust Manchester United's interest in Tonali, and it looks like this morning we've had the brief that kills that deal off. And I'd be very, very surprised if United and Tonali goes anywhere now. We have literally been victim of, yet again, Ineos and Glazer PR to cover off a couple of weeks where they're going to do nothing by pretending that they're actually in for Tonali. I said this. Look, this is just pure opinion. I'll tell you what. I'll give you the story this morning in The Athletic. Well-sourced information, and that says that effectively Manchester United identified Sandro Tonali as a priority target last summer, but didn't pursue because of the overall costs involved. And while he remains a player of interest today, they are looking at other options. There is also concern among some at United about his gambling ban. The overall cost of a potential deal is a factor. United sources speaking on condition of anonymously, played down the prospect of a move for Tonali in the summer transfer window. So I think you can basically just kill that story. I would say any other journalists that now runs a Tonali story is doing it for hype, because that is about as definitive as you can get. And I said this last week. I think I said it on Monday as well. This just doesn't feel like United are going to do this deal. It is the right deal to do. He's 26. He's one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. He could take over from Casemiro with experience, just the same as Bruno G can. But this club is on a one-way street to inexperience and failure, because they've got morons in charge who don't know how to run a football club. They just don't. They look at Chelsea and they go, oh, we want to buy people under 24 as well. And the reason I said I didn't think we were going to do this deal is because I don't think we're going to write a cheque for £100 million for a 26-year-old. And also, I don't think we want to pay wages of over 200 grand for anybody. And on top of that, this is the second time now in a week that it's been briefed through The Athletic that United are concerned about Tonali's gambling ban. And I'm telling you now, if you're Tonali and his agent, once you might let it go. Twice you're going to go, up yours. What are you bringing this up for? Because I tell you what, Man United putting it out there through The Athletic, which is basically what's been insinuated about his gambling ban. If I'm Tonali's agent, I'm fuming. I'm going, we know about this. He's served the time for this. He's playing really well. What are you bringing that up for? Just to, you know, you're only bringing that up so that some of your fans might go, oh yeah, fair play. You're trying to make yourself look good for being incompetent, basically. You're trying to justify not buying Tonali because you're worried about something that happened before. And I just think Tonali and his agent will go, but that's what Man United want. They want a way out of this deal. Basically, what Man United have done, it's like borrowing a car for a couple of weeks. You drive it around really fast, you knacker up the tyres, you ruin the engine, then you give it back. And that's what Man United have done for the last 2 weeks. They've just ridden the wave of the positivity of being linked to Tonali, and then they drop it and go, Belabor was what we were going for all along. So, look, people are saying it's the roller coaster of a transfer. You are entitled to think whatever you think. From my point of view, I've seen this so many times from this football club. And I think, Mizu says, I'd better wait for Romano news than Mark Goldbridge. Mate, we can have that conversation if you want. It's really, really quickly. This is not Mark Goldbridge news. This is The Athletic. And if you haven't got ears that can understand what they're saying, Man United have told them that they're not in for Tonali this summer, that they're concerned about his gambling issues, and that they don't want to pay £90 to £100 million or his wages. I think that's pretty conclusive, especially when Laurie Whitwell is retweeting the story as well. I think that's pretty conclusive. Fabrizio Romano might well put it out there that we still want Tonali, because ultimately Fabrizio Romano needs to do a YouTube video every day, and he probably has good connections with Tonali's agents, who's an Italian player. So it's in Tonali's interest to keep Man United in the race. But this ain't my news, mate. What my news is my opinion, and my opinion is I've never felt that we would go for Tonali because I don't trust this football club. And even if David Ornstein says Man United are in advanced talks with Tonali, I would still sit here and say, I'll believe it when I see it. because this club doesn't do those sort of things. We don't want to buy ready-to-go players. We don't want to spend £100 million on ready-to-go players. We want to spend money on players that have a future value. We want players that we can control their careers. We don't want to bring in players like Tonali, effectively. We don't have the financial desire to pay the wage, the agent fee and the transfer fee. And we don't have the ambition to go and get the best in class at anything, which is why the Telegraph are talking yesterday about Carrick being close to getting the job, which we'll talk about in a minute. But it does irritate me because I think, you know, some of our fans go and grab the Kleenex when they hear about financial stuff. Oh, well, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't pay this. We shouldn't pay that. I've never heard a Man City fan say we shouldn't pay that. I've never heard a Chelsea fan say we shouldn't pay that. I don't think I've heard an Arsenal fan say we shouldn't pay that, but you can definitely find Man United fans that will go, wow, I agree, we shouldn't be paying that. We shouldn't be paying those wages. And I'm like, we should be buying the best in class. That's what we should be doing. And at the moment, I think that it's very, very concerning because what is already happening is the club who've got no care for you at all. What have Manchester United Football Club done for you in the last few years? It's all about them. Build a stadium to make themselves rich. Spin and, you know, manipulate things to make themselves look good. I mean, did any, you know, just on Jason Wilcox, by the way, I'm going to we've got Lewis Skelly, Anderson stories to go into. I'm calling this out right here, right now, right early in the show, right? Did you see this yesterday? So, effectively, Steve McClaren did an interview yesterday and he said, he was talking about the FA Cup final against Man City. And he said it was a great plan. We'd been working on it all week. We knew that Vardiel likes having the ball on the right side. So we didn't want space as Walker bombed forward. And Maynard did a great job in that, not just in terms of stopping him, but running off him as well. It was John Stones going into the midfield, which is why it was basically a 4-2-2-2, very narrow wingers. I always thought we'd win the cup, but Erik ten Hag deserves great credit and the analyst team led by Paul Brand. So basically, Steve McClaren was assistant to Ten Hag at that time, and he said the FA Cup final, a lot of work went into that tactically, and huge credit goes to Erik ten Hag and the analyst team led by Paul Brand. I remember specifically that a story was pumped out there that Jason Wilcox picked the team and the tactics for the FA Cup final, and that was allowed to spread like bullshit fire all the way through our fan base. And I always knew there was no way a director of football walked into training ahead of that FA Cup final and said, we're playing like this with this formation. But Jason Wilcox was happy to take the glaze and certain journalists put it out there. And Steve McClaren was the assistant coach. And he's literally said what many of us knew. It was Ten Hag and the technical team that came up with that tactic, not bloody Jason Wilcox. But that some people believe that shit. They believe the shit that this football club comes out. And the only consistent at Man United over the last 2 years of absolute mayhem is Jason Wilcox. He's been in there at the start. He's still there now. And this club is just happy to allow you to believe shit to make them look good. That should be basically be Man United's motto now. We're happy to feed you shit if it makes us look good. And that's what they do. Tonali's been running as a story for 2 weeks and they know they're not going to do the deal. They know they don't want to do the deal, but they'll sit there and go, this is actually helping us with season ticket sales. We are actually selling shirts. Popularity rating is going through the roof, Jason. Leave it. Leave it. Leave it. Leave it. Leave it. Leave it. And that's what they do. And Jim GVN says, incoming news, Tonali deal on. Mate, if David Ornstein comes out later on and says Man United are in advanced talks with Tonali, then obviously there'll be a different headline. But if you are naive enough to not listen to this from The Athletic this morning, and Laurie Whitwell's retweeted it, and they have got links into the club, and The Athletic pay good money to have those links, if you don't want to believe it because you naively, after 10 years, still believe that Manchester United are telling the truth and we'll go and get best in class, you do you, mate. You do you. If you believe that, you know, Man United, for the second time in a week, through The Athletic, are happy for it to be out there that they're not interested in Tonali because he's too expensive, they're looking at other targets, and they'd be worried about his gambling problems anyway, I mean, I would argue that it's not the best way to make a player want to sign for you, to leak stuff out about how you don't want them and bad things about their past. So I am saying I pretty much would close the door on any Tonali deal. It doesn't mean there won't be another journalist saying Tonali's on the list. Maybe Fabrizio will say it. I mean, who wants their client associated with a snub from Manchester United? Nobody does. So I'm sure the stories will carry on, but you believe what you want to believe. I'll believe what I know. And that is United deciding we've had enough positivity from a player that we're not even going to sign. Time to slam the door on that and get a bit real here. And I think that's what it is. I think that's exactly what it is. And it's very worrying about the future prospects of the summer transfer window when we are shutting the door. I mean, and also, where do you go? Very, very, where would you go now? You know, a lot of people have been talking about Tonali and Wharton, or Tonali and Anderson, or, you know, take Tonali out, take Bruno Guimaraes out. Neither of those players. Where do you go now? Where do you go? Who do you go for? Like, what? Where's the experienced midfielder that we need now? I don't know who the experienced midfielder is, because we're not going for Bruno Guimaraes. We're not going for Tonali. That's a 26 and a 28-year-old. I don't know of another midfielder we're linked to who's over the age of 23. So, where are we going? What are we doing next season? Casemiro has said definitively on the international break, by the way, that it's over at Man United. The story is over. He will start a new chapter in the summer. So, we're going into next season with no midfielder over the age of 23 at the moment, based on our targets. That's the plan for next season. It's scary. And we will end up, I'm absolutely convinced we'll end up with Belabor. I want to talk about Anderson next, but I'm absolutely convinced we'll end up with Belabor, because in the same article in The Athletic, it says Man United put Belabor in the same category as Tonali last year and they briefly explored a move. Interest in Belabor could be revived this summer, but he's one of many players on the club's list. Man United's top range last year was around £50 million and they'll have more to spend in the upcoming window. Look, if you didn't watch my video from last night about Belabor, you should watch it. Because if there's somebody out there that believes Belabor is the right signing for Manchester United, beyond prayers and trust me, bro, I want to hear it. I could not believe how bad he has been for Brighton since Christmas. I knew he was bad from August to Christmas because we were talking about it every week, but I've sort of like ignored him. Over the last few games for Brighton, they beat Liverpool. He didn't start. He played 14 minutes. They beat Sunderland. He didn't play any minutes. They lost to Arsenal. He played 70 minutes and got subbed. They beat Forest. He played 4 minutes. They beat Sunderland. He came on in the 90th minute. They lost to Liverpool 3-0. He got subbed after 62 minutes. They lost to Villa. He got subbed after 22 minutes. They lost to Palace. He got subbed after 71 minutes. So in their last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 games, every game he started, they've lost. And every game they haven't used him, they've won. 4 wins and 3 losses in Brighton's last 7 games. And Belabor started the losses and didn't start the wins. I mean, James Milner is 40 years of age and he is benching Belabor, but they're winning games as well. His pass per 90 is shit. We're talking like 34 passes per 90 when most people are doing 50. He's not even a good dribbler of the ball. You know, I just don't know what United are looking at. I don't know what they're looking at with Belabor. Absolutely. And also, he's had a shit season. Everything about him says don't go anywhere near him. But United are like a gullible fish, you know, swimming towards a bloody shark's arse. You know, it's messy. Rahul says, hi, Mark. I've been watching since 2016 from India. Do you believe Saudi will be able to pull players, keeping in mind the war situation in the Middle East? I don't know, mate. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how long that's going to last and what situation is. Ultimately, it's money. And, you know, money is a factor. But, you know, obviously, I don't know. I don't know. Chunky says, fish are friends, not food. Mate, you might want to have a check what sharks eat. They don't bloody go up to a little smaller fish and say, should we have a play? They bite them in half. Unlikely a ban would cure his habit. Hope it has, says Robert McCormack. Oh, that's it. Robert, I'll leave you to the chat with that one. So basically, you're saying we shouldn't buy Tonali because once a gambler, always a gambler. I don't think. I know. I'm being very blunt with what you're saying there, but I don't think that Manchester United should be using somebody's previous gambling issues as a reason to make fans feel more comfortable about them being shit. All right. You might not think we should go for Tonali because of past gambling issues, but I don't think it's very classy to be putting that out there in the public domain. I don't. I think it's being done to try and make people like you think it's a good idea not to go near him. I think it's a low blow, really. And I know United haven't officially put it out there, but they do put stuff out to The Athletic. They do put stuff out to journalists. And that feels like whoever at United have said that is a bit of an arsehole, to be honest with you. Diane says, hi, Mark, and all United stand members. Who do you think we turn our attention to now in terms of midfield targets? We need three, but who would an alternative two be? Well, we do need to talk about that. I'm going to talk about Elliot Anderson next. Daniel Thompson with a very generous super chat says, hi, Mark, hope you're well. Awful news about the Tonali. To compete with the best, we need to get the best, which is one of. We won't ever progress, just fall further down signing risks. This ship is abysmal. Well, look, if you sign João Gomes, Baleba, Elliot Anderson, Adam Wharton, Scott, Garner, there's six players there and you might be okay with two of those six. None of them have played Champions League football and none of them have competed for top four ever in their career. You think about it. Anderson's at Forest, Wharton's at Palace, Baleba's at Brighton, Scott's at Bournemouth, Garner's at Everton, Gomez is at Wolves. None of those, pick two, pick three. None of them have ever competed in the Champions League. None of them have ever competed for top five. And they've certainly not had to do it at the same time. So I agree with you, Daniel. I think it's abysmal that this football club that lacks experience and leadership and consistency is looking to recruit youngsters with no experience in where we want to go. And my concern is that this summer will be explorative based on potential, and that will put us where Newcastle are now, you know, seventh, eighth, and no Champions League football in a year's time. And then it's all for nothing. You can't have a party just because you've qualified for the Champions League. Spurs are in the Champions League. They might be in the Championship in a couple of weeks. So it's about mentality, isn't it? Stay humble. Keep working. Lock in. Oh, we've qualified for the Champions League. Let's not buy experienced players and give the job to an inexperienced coach. And in a year's time, some of us sit there and go, oh, it's all gone to shit. What a surprise. And it's that. Well, that's what worries me, is I think United, in the way that they're run, do not see the hazards that most of us see coming down the road. They just carry on oblivious. The Glazers' promises are like a fart. Loud at first, impossible to ignore, but quickly fading away and leaving nothing but a bad smell. How we fall for this crap every time is mental, says Slow Sports News. Thank you very much. If I was Tonali, I'd say fuck you and your 1.2 billion debts, says Elliot. I think they've killed. I definitely think they've killed that deal off. I really do. I think, I don't think United want it, but I don't think Tonali will want to come to us anymore. What if the club got some assurance from Anderson, says Olu? Mate, I love the optimism. Yeah, I love that. I love the optimism that you think that Fabrizio Romano said yesterday that Manchester City are the favourites to get Elliot Anderson. And you think on a morning where United have messed up another deal, they've actually had a phone call from Elliot Anderson saying, don't worry, lads, I want to come to you. I mean, come on. Come on, mate. One day we're in talks, then it's the player has snubbed us, then we're in advanced talks, then the deal off. Our owners are useless, as JMR. And are we sure Wilcox aren't, and Sir Jim Ratcliffe aren't Man City agents, as Max loves cookies. And Gypsy says, I think I found the article, Substack, where Romano says Ineos will be going for younger players. Is there an email address I can forward it to, says Gypsy. Well, I trust you on that. You don't need to forward that. But I think we will go for younger players because I think that's the idiocy of United at the moment. Transfer sagas are so fun and so annoying at the same time. The spin is just annoying at this point, says Vagabond. You know what? It is spin, though. Just before we move on to the Anderson update and what's going on with Carrick, it is spin. Because unfortunately, because Manchester United is a business, they don't care about the fans. They only care about money. So when the Tonali stories are going around, which they may well be feeding, Like, I know for a fact that journalists have spoken to Manchester United about Tonali, and they've said it's a player of interest, and you know, we're not gonna disclose where we are in those transfer talks at the moment. So United could have said, well, no, we're not in for him at all. We're not in for Tonali. But they don't. They go, well, we're not going to comment on that. So they feed the story by not denying it, to a point where people start to believe it. People get very excited. And then it gets to a point where they go, this is getting a bit out of hand, so we better kill this story, because otherwise it will go from positive to negative. And basically they're using you to make themselves look good. Because for the last 2 weeks, people think maybe we're going to be competent this summer. Maybe we are going to get Tonali and Anderson. Maybe we are going to get a really top-class manager. And people start to dream. And the club feed off that, because that might make somebody pop down the local, you know, might make them go online and buy a Man United hoodie. Or it might make them go and buy a ticket, you know. And that's why they do it. They want to shield you from the reality to get your hand in your pocket. And that's all it is with Man United. We're run by business people and shareholders. We're not run by people who care about the club. If we were run, if we had 50% fan ownership, a lot of this shit would stop, because it'd be real talk instead of fantasy talk to make you put your hand in your pocket. And that's what it all comes down to. And that's why when people say spin, it annoys me, because you don't want it to be spin sometimes. But the reality is Man United spin their fans more than anybody for their own benefit. Because they are a business and they've got shareholders to please, and it's all about that share price. And it's all about, look, as I said to you before, if you look at Man United's share price over the last 10 years, one of the biggest spikes was Mourinho being appointed. Positive news makes them money. If a story broke today that Man United were in advanced talks for Declan Rice and David Ornstein confirmed it, that share price would shoot up. And that's what we are. Not only are we incompetent, not only are we a football club that, you know, seems to have no identity at all, we're also a football club that factually spins its own fans for its own benefit. It's lost so much of what this football club's about because we're owned by the Glazers, you know? And I said this before as well. Lots of people want Manchester City to get a 60-point deduction because they cheated. And maybe they did. And lots of people want them to get points deduction. But I would say, from the Premier League's point of view, Manchester City wanted to get money into the club, maybe illegally, not illegally, against the rules, so that they could win things. And by winning things, the Premier League has seen some good football by Pep Guardiola and Manchester City, but maybe they did it by bending the rules, right? So they're going to get investigated. Manchester United, one of the richest clubs in football in the early noughties, winning things, playing good football, gets bought by the Glazers. They never put a pound in. They sink us into massive debt. The club's nowhere near titles. And the Premier League are like, yeah, carry on. I mean, I'm not saying what Man City's done is right, but they've bent the rules to put money into the club to make them successful and make their fans happy. Manchester United, the Glazers, have bought us on debt, never put any money in, totally destroyed the club. The grounds are going to get knocked down. And the Premier League sit there going, well, there's nothing to see there. And, you know, we are still owned by the Glazers, is what I'm trying to say. And I think some people forget that the shit they've done to this football club, and Ineos, by getting into bed with them, just seems to be accepted now. Oh, Man City should get dot points. Well, maybe they should. But what have their owners done for the Man City fans? I don't think Man City fans are going to go, oh, you know, they're trying to be successful. They're trying to pump money in. The rules are not illegal. They're just Premier League rules. You can't. Thou shall not do this. Thou shall not do that. They're trying to be successful. Todd Boehly, I mean, I know it's not going well, but they're selling the women's team to themselves. They're selling hotels to themselves to get money in. They're trying to get their money in to make their club successful. Our owners are trying to take our money out to make them rich. They don't put any money in. But that's fine. And they're still here. They're just... poison. They're poison. And I think people have become so used to it, they don't even think about it. They're spinners. Transfer sagas. I've done that one from Vagabond. We were 15th last season, now only getting into the Champions League because other teams are shit. We're acting like we're title challengers. We're rubbish. We're snubbing Tonali for what, says Seth. Shouldn't Man United look at the free agent market, says Razzler. I mean, that'd be great, wouldn't it? So exciting. Let's go for cheap. The Bitter Moose says, should have buried some goals in the game changer. Too slow. No left foot. Yeah, I'm not talking about that, mate. We're talking about United here. If they won't pay £100 million for Tonali, how the hell would they pay the same for Anderson? I want to talk about this. That means this spin's written off too, only until they're done with it. Glinios are absolute scoundrels, says Jack. Right, I want to talk about this now because this is the counterpunch to we're not getting Tonali anymore. We've decided to spin you for 3 weeks. We're now going to tell you the truth because we've earned everything we can out of the Tonali story. Now we're going back to our real, real top priority. Now we're going to go back to Anderson. So this is what they're saying about Anderson now. Same article that snubbed the Tonali story. Elliot Anderson remains the top midfield target for Man United. If they were to move for him, the club would try to complete a deal before the World Cup ahead of a potential rise in price and competition should the player shine at the tournament. Also, we've seen that Elliot Anderson's price tag, and this was from Mike McGrath in the Telegraph, Nottingham Forest are valuing Elliot Anderson at more than £100 million. So we go from, we're not getting Tonali anymore. We can't afford Tonali. We don't want to spend £100 million on Tonali. We don't want Tonali. He's got gambling issues, whatever the reasons are. We're now back on Anderson, who is the number one priority again. And we're going to try and get a deal done before the World Cup because the fear is that he'll play well in the cup, the World Cup, and his value will go up. And Nottingham Forest apparently won £100 million. Well, this is just a recipe for disaster, isn't it? I mean, I would point you to Mbeumo, who we started negotiating with in May and didn't get the deal done until the middle of July. But United think that they're going to go for a midfielder where there's massive competition and get the deal done by the end of May because the World Cup basically starts as soon as the season ends. And we're aware that if we don't get the deal done before the start of the World Cup, his value will go up. So I'd be sat there if I was Nottingham Forest saying, whatever happens, we're not doing a deal until after the World Cup, unless someone gives us massive money before the World Cup. I mean, it's almost food for idiots, isn't it? To think that that's in any way a positive update. Forest are looking for 100 million. United are looking to try and get the deal done before the World Cup because they're concerned his price will go up after the World Cup. Well, it's obvious that what deal are you going to do before the World Cup? So you think he might be worth £100 million after the World Cup, so you think you're going to get him for 70 before the World Cup? I mean, do you think everyone's as stupid as you? Do you think, like, Elliot Anderson's agent's not aware that if he waits till after the World Cup, there might be more offers and more money on the table for him and his client? Do you think Forest aren't aware that if they wait till after the World Cup, his value might have gone up? This is just, we've played you about Tonali for 2 or 3 weeks and we know that you're disappointed. So now the spin is Elliot Anderson and we might try and get it done early. And I'm like, this deal has to happen. I don't know how they do it, but this has to happen. Like, because I'm looking at it and I'm going, we're clearly not getting Bruno Guimaraes. That's gone. It really doesn't look like we're going to go for Tonali now. It looks like we've killed that. So if we don't get Elliot Anderson, and considering we need two midfielders, if we don't get Elliot Anderson, where the fuck are we going? Like, seriously, if we don't get Elliot Anderson, where are we going? And if we do get Elliot Anderson, who's the second midfielder? Because Elliot Anderson, last time I checked, was 22. So, yeah, he's 23. He's just turned 23. So hardly experienced. It worries me. It worries me. I mean, I think we need midfielders more than we need fullbacks, but I think we need fullbacks very close to that as well. If we can't get Elliot Anderson, I'm very concerned about what's going to happen. I find it difficult to understand what's going on at the moment because I think when you look at the last few days, when the Tonali story looked real, there was talk of Arsenal and there was talk of Man City. And this is just pure speculation. I wonder if it's already been said
by Tonali's agent, he'd rather go to City or Arsenal. And United have gone, hello, is that the Athletic? Yeah, well, we do appreciate the player, but we've got other targets. And let's not forget his gambling problem. Bye. It, you know, that might be why United have backed out, because maybe Arsenal, who were interested in January, have already put the work in, because Arsenal do put the work in very early on players. And maybe Man City are in there. Maybe Man United are just getting out while they can. Which moves us on to Anderson. But with Anderson, we already know Man City are advanced and have put a lot of work in. We can beat Man City to players, by the way. We beat Man City to Sanchez. We beat Man City to, well, we paid more money for Maguire, but they were looking at him. So we can beat Man City to players. But it's all or nothing, really, isn't it? Like, I think we really, if we don't get Anderson and we're not getting Tonali and we're not getting Bruno Guimaraes, I don't even know what the marquee signing's going to be. And for the love of God, don't say Belaba. And it's certainly not best in class, as Gabrielle says. So, look, I think Anderson, you know, goes back to the top of the list. A lot of people don't believe we can do that deal. In fairness, I've always been quite positive about this because I just feel like, and I might be completely wrong, I feel like Ben Jacobs knows something about this deal and it seems to favour us. And I don't know whether the price is going to be less than 70 or Anderson favours us. This is speculation. I've always felt that Ben Jacobs, when he comes on, never kills the Anderson to Man United story. And I just feel like he did say something in November about the price that I think he's never mentioned really before, because he probably got a phone call from somebody saying, don't mention it. I just feel there's something about Elliot Anderson, and it might just be the fee. But that doesn't necessarily go in our favour anyway, by the way. If Elliot Anderson did have some sort of agreement, gentleman's agreement, clause, whatever, I don't know, that he goes for less than £70 million if it's a Champions League club, that's great because he's less than £70 million. But if I was Man City, I would be saying, well, look, we were willing to pay £100 million for you. We're getting you for 70, so you can have a £20 million signing on fee and we'll give you 300 grand a week. So it can go against you as well, because United ain't going to do that. We're never going to go, oh, we've saved a little bit of money here. Here's a massive wage. So it might not go in our favour if he does have a cheaper clause, because as we saw with Erling Haaland, the official price for Erling Haaland to go from Dortmund to Manchester City was, I think, £60 million. The total deal is rumoured to be 120. So another £60 million went somewhere. There's rumours that it went to agencies, Haaland, but that deal went in excess of £100 million, but Dortmund only saw 60 or 65. So even if Anderson's price is reduced, they're going to offer... They're going to offer him big wages anyway. If you want, I think we've got to get Elliot Anderson now. I mean, look, I don't know. Let me know how you feel in the comments this morning. I mean, as I said, somebody in the chat still wants to believe we're going to get Tonali. That's fine. You do you. I still believe that we can get Elliot Anderson. I just have this feeling. A lot of people in the chat are saying we've got no chance. But fundamentally, I suppose the bottom line is what we're left with this morning is, where do we go next? What do we end up with? I think we need three midfielders. And at the moment, if we can't get Elliot Anderson, I don't even know how I'd get three midfielders without really being concerned. I mean, if somebody said to me, you now, we're not getting Tonali, you can't pick Tonali, you can't pick Bruno G, and you can't pick Anderson, now go and get three midfielders that are going to make Man United a decent team next season, I would say, you've got to go Stiller. I think that could be the Bruno signing, where it's a little bit of a risk, but I feel he could come into the Premier League and be transformative, and he's in his mid-20s. So I think I've got to go for Stiller. I'm probably going to try and get Adam Wharton. And my third choice would probably be someone like João Gomes or James Garner. But there's risk with those three. I'd go Stiller, Wharton, and Garner or Gomes. And that's not plan A. That's not best in class. That's just what I think could work if we get a bit of luck. Best in class would be Tonali, Anderson, and then a Stiller or a João Gomes. But I don't think we'll get three. As Sean McGinley says, I think three is looking, you know, difficult. But look,
this is why we have this community, and this is why it's so good, because, you know, I used to do this. Like, I remember the summers of Sir Alex Ferguson saying there's no value in the market. And we didn't have YouTube communities where we could have a live chat. I'd go into work, and the girl who sat opposite me, Neve, all she wanted to do was eat toast and talk about Mammy and what her brother Declan was doing, or was it Donal? And I'd be there going, I can't believe it. It's spin, Neve. It's spin. Vidal, it's not true. And she'd be going, yeah, me and Declan and Donal and whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, didn't have anyone to talk to. So at least we've got people to talk to. And I just think, like, I want Man United to be great. I believe we can be. I believe there's a pathway to success in football. But we're not at the wheel of that journey. We're passengers. And I'm looking at it and I'm going, like a broken sat nav, you're going the wrong way. You need to turn around. And they're going quicker and quicker, further and further away. Let me talk about this Carrick story, by the way, from one controversy to another. John United says, Ineos only go for players who say they want us, which makes deals easier, but not every player will feel that way. They need to believe in the project. We're competing with big clubs for top talent. I think it's a great point, John. I think we do go for players that want to come to Man United. So Mbeumo wanted to come to Man United. I think he supported us as a kid. Cunha supported us as a kid, wanted to come to us. So it works. Sesko wanted to come to us because it was his or Newcastle. Le Mans obviously wanted to come to us. So it's easier to do a deal when we get the buy-in from the player. But you can't live off that. John's right. You can't live off that all the time. Like, Man City have got no history. Man City don't sign players that desperately want to play for Man City. They sign players that when they speak to them go, you're a successful club with a top-class manager and I want to be part of your project. We are still selling you. And when I say you, the real Man United. The real Man United is the passion, it's the history, it's what it is. And that's what United sell. They don't sell a competent manager, a good team, a good board, an ambitious board, a great director of football. They sell you. That's not enough. You do need the top-class manager. You do need the top-class squad. You do need the ambitious board. And that's the problem. If we don't have a player that's locked in on wanting to be a Man United player, we don't get the players that could be persuaded. And again, some of our fans are running for the Kleenex going, oh, yeah, I just want players who want Man United. But they can be persuaded to want Man United. Eden Hazard, when he was coming to the Premier League from France, had a choice between Chelsea, Man City, Man United, and I think it was Arsenal. And he chose Chelsea. And Chelsea were only in the Champions League because they won the final against Bayern Munich. They weren't expected to win. But he chose Chelsea because Chelsea sold him a project, sold him an idea. And he did really well. Some people said, well, he went there as a mercenary. He went there and became one of the best players in the Premier League. So he did really, really well. And they sold him a project. United need to sell projects to people as well. We can't just take players that want to desperately come to Man United. Might be good players that look at Man United and go, I like Man United, I'm not sure. And you got to sell them that project. We don't want it. We don't seem to want to do that. And we won't become a good club if we can't sell projects. We won't. Which is why I think we heard something from Anderson, says Olu. At the rate this is going, we're going to end up with Belabor and Garner for 150 million. Joke of a board and negotiation team, says Once. Well, it's like John says Once. If we're only going to go for players that are easy to get, you will end up with players that people don't want. Nobody is going for Belabor at the moment, are they? So it's an easy deal. Right now, is there nobody that wants to buy United, says Tech? No, transfers, done that one as well. Okay, let me just talk to you about this that came in yesterday, because I obviously was with you yesterday morning, but I didn't have a live show in the evening. And this came out yesterday from the Telegraph. It was basically, oh God, where was it? See if I can. I know what was said, but I want to sort of get it spot on. I'm never going to find it. Okay, yeah, it was in the Telegraph yesterday. It's looking increasingly likely that Michael Carrick will be appointed permanently at Old Trafford.
look, I don't know how credible that news is, but it's looking increasingly likely that Michael Carrick will get the Man United job is another absolute label of incompetence from this terrible club. I mean, what is it about March compared to the end of the season and when you gave Carrick the job that is making it increasingly likely that he's going to get the job? And don't tell me he's won a few games of football. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer won 8 games in a row. We gave him the job, we didn't interview anyone else, and it was a massive mistake. What about Man United at the moment makes it increasingly likely that Michael Carrick's getting the job? Why does that even need to be out there? Why is it increasingly likely that he's going to get the Man United job? And that's the bit that irritates me. I completely agree he should get interviewed for the job, but when you're getting interviewed for a job, having interviewed people in the past, you don't do an interview process saying he's increasingly likely to get the job, because that's not a fair process. You interview everybody with an open mind. And we haven't even interviewed anybody yet. So why are United happy for it to be out there that it's increasingly likely that Michael Carrick's going to get the job? Because they're fucking rubbish. Because they're idiots. Because they, again, like we were just talking about players, they can't negotiate or sell projects to people who are a little bit uncertain. So they're probably going, Carrick really wants the job. This is the people we want at Man United. We want people who are desperate for the job. Have you ever thought that people who are desperate for the job want the job because there's nothing better out there and it's their dream job and maybe you're over-promoting them? But my big issue with this is not that Michael Carrick gets the job. If they want to give Carrick the job, I'll be right at the front of the queue with everybody else if it goes wrong saying, I told you so. And I don't want to be at the front of that queue, but I don't agree with Carrick getting the job. It terrifies me. I think there's too many red flags. I'm not saying it's the equivalent of signing Baleba. That would be unfair. Carrick has done quite well, but I don't rate his coaches. I don't think the football's been good enough, and I don't think they're experienced enough. And I think it's a massive, massive risk. But if the club want to take that risk, they take responsibility. And I tell you what, if it goes wrong with Carrick, Wilcox will be gone. So there is a cloud. There is a silver lining. And I think Wilcox should be gone anyway. But I don't understand why it's increasingly likely in late March that Michael Carrick's going to get the job. I'm sort of baffled by this because we're meant to be running a thorough process where we interview best-in-class candidates. And why would I allow it to be out there as a football club that my fans are thinking Carrick's going to get the job when I'm going to interview other candidates who are apparently very good candidates? So I'm a little bit concerned that yet again, United are just going to give the job to an interim coach without interviewing other people. And I've said this and I'll say it again. If they give the job to Carrick without interviewing anybody else, they've basically killed him, because there's no credibility to him getting the job if he's just given it for doing well as an interim. If they want him to be here for the next few years and build something, they have to put him, for his own benefit, through a process where we know as fans he's got the job ahead of other candidates. You imagine a workplace, right? And there's a job up for grabs and somebody's just doing it in the short term and your boss says they're only doing it in the short term and then we're going to run a proper process. Then they do quite well and the boss says, look, they have done well in it and I think they deserve to be part of the process, but we're interviewing loads of people. Apply, right? If they then get the job, people might go, oh yeah, jobs, whatever. But at least it's been a transparent process. If they get the job and nobody gets interviewed for it and it goes wrong, I don't want Carrick to get the job. I've been very, very open about that. What I'll feel like I need to know who else is going for the job. If it's Gareth Southgate, give it to Carrick. If it's Glasner, give it to Carrick. If it's Nagelsmann, give it to Nagelsmann. If it's Enrique, give it to Enrique. If it's Tuchel, give it to Tuchel. But I need to know who the other candidates are, because I might say, give it to Carrick. But you have to go through a process. If they don't go through a process and they just give it him, what are we doing? What are we doing? I mean, if they give it to Carrick without interviewing people, I would actually be getting to the point where I'd be going, Berarda did work at Man City. Wilcox did work at Man City. Sir Jim Ratcliffe has a season ticket at Chelsea. I mean, is this just on purpose now? Is this the are they just sinking Man United? Because I'd be like, how can you give a manager, an interim, the job without interviewing anybody else? When a few years ago, we did exactly the same thing and it didn't work. Like, for the love of God, just interview some candidates. But maybe they can't interview anyone. Maybe nobody bloody wants the job. Maybe Carrick's the only one who wants it. I don't know. Dan says, Wilcox trying to run us as Southampton, buy young, cheap, develop and sell for profit. This fits Jim's business model too. It is quite scary that that might be what we're doing, Dan. And the interesting thing is we won't know if that's what we're doing and for 3 or 4 years, because if in 3 or 4 years we sell Yoro and we sell Le Mans, we'll know what's going on. I don't know. I mean, look, you might be right. That's very speculative to say that United are, you know, flipping young players for profit and we're actually running a, you know, basically a that type of a football club. But I don't know. Bruno will be off. United sells lies, not projects, as Mario. Well, look, there was something that came out yesterday about how Manchester United's, Bruno Fernandes was on board with United going for someone like Tonali or Bruno Guimaraes, which I'm sure he would be. I think Bruno Fernandes will stay. But if he's true to his word, I'd be looking at it this morning and going, so it's not Bruno G, it's not Tonali, and I'm going to be playing at number 10 ahead of two players that are inexperienced next season, running the ship. And if you're Bruno, he's used to doing that, he might stay. But it's not really an incentive to stay, is it? If nothing's really changing. And look, I don't know. Bruno might stay if we get Belaba and João Gomes. He might stay. But I was sort of hoping Bruno would be, I want you to go and get people like Elliot Anderson and Tonali, otherwise I'm off. But we don't know whether Bruno's going to do that or not. But it's certainly, if you're selling him a project, I would imagine that a project of Enrique, Tonali and Anderson is one you're going to sign up for quicker than Carrick, Belaba and João Gomes. But I don't know. Bruno might sign it on either terms. Someone said, did you hear what JJ Gabriel's dad said about Carrick getting the job? I don't know whether it was true. But apparently JJ Gabriel, who's this amazing talent we've got coming through the youth team, apparently his dad said he wants Carrick to get the job. With all due respect to his dad, I don't care. Your opinion is about as valid as everybody else's. But I certainly do not want to be getting into a situation where relatives and family members of players are vocal about the future of Manchester United. I mean, we had one player's brother wearing a T-shirt at Old Trafford a couple of months ago. So I'm not personally up for relatives having a say publicly on what should happen at Man United. In fact, I think the way the modern game's going, too many hangers-on of players have, and I'm not saying a father's a hanger-on, but what I mean is too many people close to players have an opinion, and we've had an issue with that. Ganacho. So, you know, I think that professionalism is really important. These players are there, paid to do a job for Man United. I'm not massively interested in public statements or tweets from relatives. I don't think it makes any difference to Man United, quite rightly, either. But a lot of people want Carrick to get the job. And look, Carrick does take an interest in the youth, so maybe that's the way it is. Mario, thank you very much for that. If we spend 150 million in the midfield, do you see us buying enough players to fill out the squad to compete in multiple competitions next year? Look at Newcastle. I think Newcastle, Louis Buckley, whether we buy a player from Newcastle or not, I think Newcastle are the warning. If you don't have a big enough squad, I mean, Newcastle's first 11 is very good, but it hasn't been able to deal with Champions League and the Premier League. It hasn't at all. We need a squad next season that's a good first team and a good bench. Otherwise, we will end up struggling next year. I mean, look, I don't want to forebode this, but can you envisage a situation where next February, we're eighth in the league, we're into the last stages of the Champions League, but the squad is tired and, you know, we're running on empty? And I don't think it matters who the manager is. I mean, obviously, if it's an inexperienced manager like Carrick or Glasner or whoever, it makes it worse. But I don't think it matters whether it's Enrique or Carrick. Do you envisage a situation next February where we've played loads of football, we're not in the top five, and we haven't done anything in the January transfer window because we never do, and we're a bit like Newcastle and Liverpool and Chelsea, where you're sort of limping towards the end of the season, trying to get over the line, and you haven't got enough players, and then you end up out of Europe again. I mean, that's something that goes beyond managers or signings. That is something that if I was on the board, I'm predicting that as a possibility that we need to try and figure out how to avoid it. And quantity does need to be a part of the conversation over quality as well. Hope Tonali goes to City next season and rips our midfield with Belaba and Mainoo, says Melvin. Patrick Lynch says, it amazes me that the board believe buying cheap and young is somehow future-proofing. Playing quality and experience helps maintain the consistency to stay in the top four, stay in the Champions League. It's backward thinking from them. But you know what, Patrick? More and more, and I do agree with what you're saying, but more and more, I'm starting to think about that great comment yesterday. And I'd never really heard it before. We need to build a stadium. It's going to take a long time. Do you spend 80, 90 million pounds on a 26-year-old with no sale resale value who in 5 years' time might be done? Or do you spend 70, 80 million pounds on a 22-year-old who in 9 years, who can probably give you 9 years? I think they're future-proofing on age in the belief that it's better to buy a player that is going to be here longer. But you're absolutely spot on. A 22-year-old might stay for 9 years, but what's the quality of that 9 years? Do you develop them properly? Do they hit the potential? Do they play every week? Whereas your 26-year-old comes in and delivers from the start and plays for 5 years, but it's backwards thinking, isn't it? It's sort of like, well, he'll only give us 5 years, where this one will give us 9 years, but you're not looking at the difference between what he will give you and what they might give you. It's what might and will, isn't it? The thing that should scare the shit out of everyone with these spins is Bruno leaving for good, which definitely should be the final nail in Man United's coffin, because that's probably a point of no return. I mean, it's scary to think what Man United are about Bruno. I said Fairyland was spinning for United, says Marlowe United. What did Rio Fairyland say a couple of days ago? Tonali and Bruno Guimarães are not the right types of players for Man United, in his opinion. They're not energetic. Yeah, completely misprofiled the players, strangely. And it almost felt like that relationship between him and the club, Marlowe is basically saying he's a mouthpiece to give stuff out to prepare fans. But I don't know. Nothing would surprise me about Manchester United and the advice they take. I hope you and everyone in the chat is well and healthy. Have a great week, says Justin. Yeah, I hope everyone is having a great week. I mean, it is Easter week, so a lot of you probably off. It's a short week for a lot of you as well, because it's a bank holiday in the UK on Friday. There's a couple of other bits I wanted to talk about, but I think I'll just pass them over to Beth for the 2 o'clock show. Really good interview with Mike Keegan yesterday, by the way. Really good interview. I mean, look, I haven't listened to all of it because I was going down to London yesterday, but... I really did enjoy it, and there was something that I just wanted to bring in from that, actually. It wasn't that. Oh, God. I'm losing it this morning. It was what he said about Carrick. I retweeted it, I think. Yeah, Man United will be well aware of the risks that come with bringing Carrick in on a permanent deal, knowing how Solskjaer's reign ended after being hired under similar circumstances, and how the mood around an interim manager can change when they're appointed permanently. I thought that was a great sentence. I hope what Mike Keegan is saying is true, because it makes total sense. I just don't know whether Man United are thinking like that. Man United will be well aware of the risks that come with going for Carrick, having done it with Solskjaer, but more importantly, how the mood changes around an interim when they get the job permanently. And I remember that. I thought it was a great observation. Remember under Ollie, it was Ollie's at the wheel. You know, it was great. It was exciting. But the minute he signs the contract, the mood changed. It was like, well, you've got the job now. Now you've got to deliver. And the scrutiny just changed completely. You know, the performances mattered more. Whereas before that, it was just, we won again. I remember going to watch a Solskjaer game. I think we played Southampton I think Lukaku scored two goals and I think Pereira scored a free kick. I think we won 3-2. And I was at the game. And because afterwards I did the interview and everyone started singing Ollie's at the Wheel. We didn't play that well. We didn't play that well, but we won. And it was a bit scrappy, but we won. But it didn't matter because we won. And it was like, you know, he's won again. Ollie's won again. And then he got the permanent job. And suddenly, even if you won games, the way we were winning games mattered. And it's true. I think when you go from interim to permanent, all the protection that you get from an interim disappears. And it's like, right, what are you really here for? And it is true. And look, whether the club are thinking that as part of the thing, I don't know. Carrick in says Carrick's not Ollie. Hello. No, I know. I know they're two very different people, mate. But as I've said to you before, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the manager for 2.5 years and Michael Carrick was his assistant. In fact, Michael Carrick was Mourinho's assistant for the 6 months before Ole came in. So Michael Carrick was here with Ole. I don't know why some of you want to pretend that Carrick and Ole are completely different, because Carrick was with Ole for 2.5 years. He was with Mourinho for the last few months when he got the sack. And Steve Holland basically plays Ole ball. So there are similarities. Thank you everybody for watching. Oh God, what am I doing tonight? I think it's a 7 o'clock show tonight, isn't it? I'm pretty sure. Well, it's the playoffs, isn't it? It's the World Cup playoffs, to see who goes to the World Cup. Italy, Bosnia, isn't it? Denmark. I hope Denmark get there because it would be nice for Dorgu, because I think Dorgu fits for Denmark. They probably would have made it to the World Cup. So I really hope for Dorgu that Denmark and Rasmus, I like Rasmus, but and Eriksson, but I really hope Denmark win. So, but England are playing Japan as well. I want to watch Japan. I think they've got some interesting players. So we'll do United Stand at 7 tonight, basically. So yeah, 7 o'clock here and then 7:45. That's football. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Cheers, Mark, says Justin and everyone in the chat. Well, thank you, everybody, for you. Get your comments in, of course, what your thoughts on the stuff going on. And I will speak to you on the next one. Take care.